With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the most dramatic podcast ever. An iHeartRadio podcast. Welcome to the most dramatic podcast ever. I am Chris Harrison alongside Lauren Zima. Great show today. The beautiful, the talented Jennifer Nettles is going to be on the show. She is obviously country music singer, superstar. Sugarland has done her own solo stuff as well. But now she is venturing into, well, my territory, reality show host. She is hosting Farmer Wants a Wife, the new reality show on Fox. Also on the show today, one of the farmers, Farmer Hunter.
I think you just like saying farmer.
I do like saying farmer. He is. I was trying to figure out a way. How could I say he is as full as a tick on a bloodhound?
Oh my God.
Lots of redneck sayings and lines on Farmer Wants a Wife. It's the new show on Fox where four farmers are
finding love,
trying to find love, but not giving up who they are, which is they're farmers. They're living on the land. So we got four men from the heartland and we have women from all across the country vying for their love and attention. Although not all of them are up for this.
You know, the show had me thinking because of the format of it, the way that the women move in right away with them. They see these guys' whole real lives right from the start. And I kind of started thinking about like you and I and dating and, you know, the question of when do you reveal your whole true self and show your whole true life to someone that you're dating?
It should be, in my opinion, if you're smart, a slow burn.
Oh, interesting. I didn't expect you to say that.
I'm a slow reveal. Leave a little something to be desired, a little something to learn. It just in that, I think relationships have stages. They move to a certain point. Like, yes, I thought I love you early on, but we've created and gone so much deeper now.
So true.
That I want to reveal more to you in more intimate ways, whether it's my kids, my mom, my dad, what I really think about my mom and my dad and my brother, you know, but you know what I mean? It's like, I think you scratch the surface early on and it's like, you can have them into the house or whatever, but I think then you go much deeper as you go. So I would say a slow burn. Are you saying not?
Well, I have this friend and I will say she's been on the struggle bus in dating and I've tried to, I don't agree with some of her opinions. Like she said, well, I'm myself, my whole, everything about myself right from date one. And so then like, if they don't like me, it's like, take me or leave me. And if they don't like me, then that's it and whatever. And I think there's a balance because look, you don't want to misrepresent who you are and you don't want to be that, you know, like the movie Runaway Bride, where she's like changing Julia Roberts' character infamously, right, changed how she likes her eggs for each guy. You don't want to change who you are for someone and you don't want to misrepresent who you are. But at the same time, I think in different areas of our lives, like you don't walk into a business meeting and act exactly like your full self, or you have different versions of yourself. Like I have who I am in a first business meeting with somebody and then I have who I am when I'm like with my siblings or with you. And so we have these different versions of ourselves. And I think when you're first dating somebody, be yourself, but be a certain version of yourself.
Hopefully
you could come across crazy.
The best version of yourself for that particular moment.
Like I wasn't doing my Voldemort impression for you on the first date.
Trust me, I did not know that's what I was buying into with Lauren Zima.
I wasn't talking which Harry Potter book is my favorite.
Yeah, she didn't give me the Harry Potter test of what house you're in. All that has to come.
Can we do the Harry Potter test for people right now?
Not yet.
Okay. It's a one question test. Please DM me on Instagram if you want to do the test.
Because how are people going to answer? You'd have to go through. It'd be very tough and convoluted, which I also feel like if you reveal everything about yourself, it's like drinking out of a fire hydrant early on. That's a lot for somebody to take in. Let them drink out of the water fountain.
Well, that's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see on Farmer Wants a Wife. Yeah. Like I would be, obviously this is a TV show. It's an experiment. And so we're going to throw these people in right away. And the question is, can you take the full reality of someone's life, everything about who they are, the way they live, everything right from day one? Like with you and I, you actually introduced me to the kids fairly early on, but you also said, look, A, my kids are older, they're teenagers. Right. They're not, you don't have to worry about like a younger child forming an emotional attachment to you right away. Cause I was a little nervous. And then you said, I have my kids 50% of the time. So if we're going to be dating each other, you're going to see them quite a lot. I am trying to think of how quickly I like threw you in. It really was pretty quick. But again, I think there's also something exciting about maintaining a little mystery too and unfolding things.
Speaking of mystery.
Oh, yes.
And unfolding. And we'll get back to Farmer Wants Wife because we're going to have Jennifer Nettles. And
country icon. I think you have a little bit of a celeb crush on Jennifer
Nettles. I do have
Nettles.
A celeb crush on Jennifer Nettles. She's incredibly talented.
Yeah. It's like a talent crush.
I've been a
crush.
Big, yeah, huge fan. Farmer Hunter, we'll see if I'm a fan. I got to talk to him. See what this farmer's all about. But the mystery that is Aaron Rodgers. And again, this is when our two worlds kind of collide. Green Bay Packer quarterback. Aaron Rodgers.
You're transitioning into the most dramatic headlines of the week.
Yeah. This has been a dramatic headline that you and I talked a lot about. He is an eccentric guy, to say the least. And he's been known for, he goes on these meditative trips, these retreats. He marches to the beat of a different drummer. And he recently just went to a quiet, dark retreat.
Quiet is an understatement. Okay, I'm going to take this over because for once I can speak on a sports story.
Okay.
As you said, usually our worlds don't intersect, but when sports comes into the entertainment websites, when I see it on those, then I know. Now, Aaron Rodgers has dated a lot of famous people, so I do know who he is. Dated Olivia Munn.
Yeah. Danica Patrick,
yeah. Yes. So Aaron Rodgers, in trying to figure out his next step in his football career, has revealed that he went to not just a quiet, a four-day silent retreat in almost total darkness in a space, an unknown location that was at least partially underground. And the only thing he had was a bed, a mat on which to meditate, and that's it.
Yeah, now, I saw this. It's at Sky Cave is the name of it. It's a 300 square foot, partially underground, hobbit-like dwelling. I saw, you can see the door, so it really is like the Hobbit.
Okay, so he's paying to go be in, he's yes. paying essentially to be in solitary confinement, which is in some way forms of torture and imprisonment, but yes.
I think we shut down Guantanamo Bay because of this. No, but it's, you and I have a little different opinion on this.
We do?
I think
okay,
so.
Okay, I came to Chris and take? I said, this is you would wild to me. I would never do this. First of all, I am way too afraid of the dark. I mean, every night when we go to sleep, I'm waking up a couple times in the night. And I don't know if anybody out there has contacts or glasses. My contacts prescription is 8.5. Think of readers, like reader's glasses are like 1.5.
Like the bottom of a Coke bottle? That's what you wear when you're a six.
Yes.
She's an 8.5.
So I wake up in the middle of the night. I see a shadow. I'm like, someone's in the room. I'm screaming. I'm waking you up.
Right.
The idea of being in four full 24-hour periods of total darkness is terrifying.
How long? What's the over-under on Lauren Zima in this room? How long?
What do you mean?
Minutes,
that I could be in there?
Hours? Could you make it a day?
If I was able to just pull the plug, I would maybe an hour. I don't know. I'd lose all sense of time. I also can't handle the idea of not talking to anybody for 4 days. Like
the guy who runs the retreat will stop by and just check on you. He checks on the guests. By the way, the door is not locked. You are in control. There is a light switch. The room is fully powered. You can flip on the lights. You can walk outside. You can walk in the woods. But the idea is to put yourself in the uncomfortable and live in the uncomfortable. And what Aaron was saying and what others that do this say is, it is working on those 6 inches between the ears. It's about putting yourself in the uncomfortable and not reaching for your phone, reaching for food, reaching for exercise, reaching for whatever that breaks that uncomfortability. You got to live in it and sit in it.
Sometimes I get scared about if I do experiences like this, like what might break in my brain or something. That's what scares me a little bit. But then I also see what you're saying. Okay, I didn't know he could take a walk in the woods. That makes, if I could get outside, although then I'd be afraid somebody would be in the woods. Anyway, this is also like, we could really dig into how this is like a huge part of this is how women are raised with so much more fear and instilled with fear and to be afraid
That's
than
true.
Men are. Yeah, I mean,
think very of- valid point. the only other person I saw that did this was this guy that crossed Antarctica and has summited Everest twice. He goes there religiously and does 7-day stints in this room.
Okay, so would you do this?
I think it would be interesting. And so, you know, and Aaron's, look, he's 39 years old. He went down to Peru and did ayahuasca. The psychedelic. So he's been known to do these things. And this is just another step as he's trying to figure out, by the way, if he's coming back to Green Bay. And if he does, he's due $59.4 million. I don't have to sit one day in the dark to just come back and pick up 60 mil. But this is what Aaron has done to contemplate his future and put himself in that uncomfortable position. He is an interesting guy.
So would you do this?
I have been to a silent monastery.
You have? Okay, look at this. The mystery unfolds, continues to unfold. I did not know this.
I was on the board of my church. This was back in California, and you go up to this where the monks are in Santa Barbara, and you live in silence among the monks for 1, 2, 3 days. And so there are times that you speak when you're in prayer or whatever, but for the most part, the entire place is in silence. You have no phone, no reception. We're not in the dark, and there are other humans around, and you're eating, but that's it. So I think it's pretty liberating. It's pretty interesting.
What did you take away from that?
You just spent a lot of time in thought.
But what did you take away? What did you learn about yourself, or what was your big takeaway that you would remember?
I've always been a believer that you need to be comfortable with yourself, by yourself, within yourself. I've always believed that. It's what honestly got me through The Bachelor and Bachelorette, because I traveled so much of the time by myself. I would often not go with the cast. So I would be by myself traveling for days, wouldn't speak to anybody, and became very comfortable, almost too comfortable with that. I think it's important to have that spirituality, to be able to go within yourself and be silent. It's a powerful thing.
Well, this does, I did do, and first of all, I can't believe I never knew this. We've got to go on a long date and keep learning about each other. No, I did do the hiking retreat that I did in the fall. And I told you one of my takeaways from that, now it was on a much smaller scale. We did these hikes every day, these 12-mile hikes. And if anybody follows me on Instagram, I was doing 10K a day, 10,000 steps a day to prepare for that. What I was preparing for was 12 miles a day of hiking. And on the last day, they purposely spaced us out on the hike so that we had to hike alone, that you couldn't walk and talk with somebody else. And so I hiked by myself for a couple hours. And actually, that was a big learning moment for me, because something I do think I have to work on is like being okay in the silence, being okay with myself. I always think my mind goes crazy and I need to talk to people. And I did walk away from that thinking, wow, I enjoyed being by myself. And I like experiences that push you to change. So I'm totally in for this. I have to say, what scared me about the Aaron thing was the darkness. Yeah. I couldn't be in the darkness for 4 days.
That's what's interesting is, and again, there are breaks from it, but to be enveloped in that darkness and there is no reception, that's a lot.
Although you made a good point. And I will say, we were talking about this a little bit before the pod. You said, we do have to put in our minds the perspective that Aaron Rodgers, the level of fame he has, the level of money he's like, gotta, like you said, figure out what he wants. He might need some silence. There's a lot of noise.
To step out of Lambeau Field where there are hundreds of thousands of people screaming and yelling, you know, and to break away from that and just be quiet. I respect that. He's a very interesting guy. I've met Aaron on a number of occasions. The first time I met him, this is a true story, really bizarre. I was at Bel Air Country Club in LA playing golf with a friend of mine. And he says, hey, do you mind if this other guy joins us? It was Aaron Rodgers. This is pre-JoJo and Jordan being on the show. He was dating Olivia Munn. He says, hey, I had a bizarre connection to Olivia Munn through Oklahoma. And she said, yo, she speaks highly of you. We love the show. We watch it. He was a pretty religious watcher of The Bachelor, he and Olivia Munn. You know, we talked a little bit about it and all that, had a good time. Flash forward a year later, JoJo season of The Bachelorette, Jordan Rodgers, his brother. It kind of comes to light that he is estranged from his family. He doesn't speak to Jordan or his family. And we kind of blew up Aaron's life a little bit in that regard. Then I see him at another golf event, AT&T Pebble Beach. We're up at Pebble. And I specifically sought him out when we were private and there were no cameras around. I didn't know if he was going to choke me out, punch me, whatever. I was like, hey, are we okay? Because I kind of blew your life up. And he says, no, no, man, we're all good. Don't worry about it. And he was actually very generous and kind about it. I see these two sides of him and I find it very interesting. And your take on this, I love Jordan Rodgers. I like Aaron Rodgers. They're both good guys. Yeah, you know, Aaron's a little eccentric and a little, you know, kooky, but who cares? He's not hurting anybody. Mm. So I find it interesting that if I didn't know them as brothers and I was at a bar with Jordan Rodgers and Aaron walked in, I would get up, give Aaron a high five, give him a hug and say, hey, man, come meet this guy, Jordan. He's a cool, he played football as well. And he's
right, you two should talk.
Yeah, y'all should talk. You're really going to connect. If you took away what they are angry, whatever happened, they would actually probably be friends if they ran into each other. I thought of that as very odd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to remember we don't know what we don't know. There's
exactly.
Probably
there's history.
So many layers to that and things that have happened that we have no idea about, even though we know and love JoJo and Jordan. It's so hard because family estrangements are something that I don't think we talk about that much in our culture. It has this kind of faux pas to it. And yet so many people I know, including myself, have like family members that they don't talk to or haven't seen or are estranged from. And the thing that's tough about family is on the one hand, you think to yourself, well, gosh, it's family. You know, can't you just work it out? Can't we put it aside, whatever it was, and figure it out? And then on the other hand, our family, these are not people who we choose. You know, your friends are people you choose, your family you're born into. And just because someone's your family member doesn't mean you're going to get along with them. So I see both sides of it. I also wonder sometimes maybe, and hopefully, you know, there's a time heals all wounds factor. Our familial relationships are so long in our lives. And I don't think any family member can go through years and years without having a fight or an issue. Although you and I talk about that a lot. I fight with my family so much more than Chris does.
True.
But yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if anything will ever change there because
I hope so.
And everybody in that situation seems great. Although, you know, we certainly don't know.
Right. We don't know the real score.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not for us to know unless they want to come on the show and I'll have them both on and let's patch this up. Let's bring this family back together. Another major headline that hit this week that hit close to home, literally and figuratively.
Where did it hit?
It hit, honestly, a little bit below the belt. This headline hits a little bit below the belt. My old friend Dean Unglert from Bachelor Paradise fame.
I think Dean's most known for Bachelor in Paradise, yes.
Does he know?
Don't you remember Dean was like, I mean, he and Kaylin are together now, but
yeah.
Wasn't Dean the original... He was like the start of all that F-boy stuff.
Yeah, but his hometown really made news on the show too during The Bachelorette. But regardless.
Dean, now engaged to Kaylin.
We're going from like one eccentric story and one eccentric guy to the next. Because Aaron Rodgers and Dean are a little bit similar in that way.
The quirkiness.
Like right now, we would be talking to Dean about this story we're about to talk about, except he's in Antarctica.
Oh, yes, you couldn't get a hold of him because he's in Antarctica. You actually tried to get in touch with him.
Right.
He's always in a van somewhere.
We
love him.
Way south of the border. Anyway, so the story is this. Dean went on a podcast and was saying how he feels it shouldn't be just incumbent upon the woman for birth control.
No, I think it started with Kaylin, just to be clear. Kaylin went on their podcast and said that Dean has told her he doesn't think the birth control should all fall on the woman. And so he thinks maybe he should get a vasectomy now because they're not ready to have kids yet.
And then he would just undo it
and
get a reversal when it's time to have kids. Now, I think he's taken this a little further now and actually spoken to a doctor about it. But Dean, that is not the birth control you're looking for. There are others at the pharmacy There's a whole aisle where you can put things on, wear things.
Okay, wait. I have to call you out on this right now. I think that what Dean's saying is very right. It is all in the woman. I will say, and I haven't, if Dean's had a conversation with the doctor, I haven't listened to that. My first reaction was, okay, wait, I got to go research this because, I mean, a vasectomy is a pretty serious surgery, right? And how, and most importantly, how successful are the reversals? Because you don't want to go have a surgical procedure where you might then never be able to have kids. But I will say that, okay, for example, I know a lot of women who have IUDs. Mm-hmm. Getting an IUD, and I don't have one, but getting an IUD from what I've heard from all my good friends is so painful. It is, I mean, I have had women say that they think you should go on, they wish they'd gotten to go under for it because it's super painful. And so that's not nothing. And women taking birth control pills every day for months or years of their lives, that comes with major risks. I mean, it's hard. There's birth control, while so important, every option comes with a downside.
Dean's not wrong, but he's also not right.
Okay, why don't you just tell everybody, just be real, Chris Harrison, about why you said it hits below the belt.
This is an operation I'm very familiar with. I went through this operation post my two kids. So I've been there and done that. And the operation itself, not a big deal.
Really?
I probably shouldn't say that way, but it's not. It's really not a big deal.
How do you mean?
It's not. It's not painful. It's not that uncomfortable. It's just, you get it done. Probably took 30, 45 minutes. They put a little boo-boo strip on you and you go, you know, they pull your vas deferens tube out. They cut it, they cauterize it. And here's the problem. I also know people who have gotten reversals. The reversal is painful.
Oh,
it is much more of a laborious project. I'm not a doctor. I have played one on TV for 20 years, but I'm not a doctor. But I do know plenty of people, because I am of that age where a lot of my friends have done this. Some have gotten reversals. Yes, it hurts. And the pain thing, it's not a big deal. I'm not saying don't do it for the pain, but it's also not 100%. It's not. And I know, I don't know what the averages are. I don't know what the percentages are, but I know two guys that I talked to this week, I played golf with, both tried to have reversals. Both did not work. One had to go in twice. And the other guy just didn't work.
Mm.
There's a famous broadcaster, sportscaster. He tried to get a reversal. He told me about it. So it is much, it's a much more intensive project to try and, because when they cut your vas deferens tubes and they literally cauterize it, you're smoking. It's like, think of a welder. They're welding it shut.
Oh, God.
So they got to find those two
water
and connect them. So it's not just as easy as, hey, I'm going to cut these. Yeah, I'm going to turn the spigot off for a little bit and then we'll turn it back on when we want to have kids. So again, Dean, you're not wrong. I appreciate what he's saying and you're right. It shouldn't just be on the woman and it shouldn't be that you can't go through a little uncomfortable pain or whatever to get this done and be there. But I don't know if you're right and this is the correct path for you if you really want to have kids soon.
So when you were saying, Dean, there are other methods of birth control available, what you were trying to say
is... Put on a condom.
Okay.
I mean, put on a condom. They got lots of them. It's just an easier way to go.
Well, look, I was doing some light Googling. Again, I'm no expert, but I saw one doctor talking about how like 85% success rate on the reversals, which is high, but still, do you want it to... I mean... If you've never had kids and you're doing this as your birth control method, it sounds like you would not want to go the vasectomy route when you'd then only have an 85% chance of pregnancy.
If you had told me when I was 25, 26, 27, whatever, when I knew I was going to have children, that I wanted to have children, that was a part of my life plan. If you had said, hey, go through this, it's going to knock 15 to 20% off your chance of having a kid. It's already kind of difficult enough for many couples to have children, as you know. That's not, knocking 15 to 20% off is a big deal. Like that's not a percentage I would be willing to take.
Well, everyone, you know, we thought we were talking about Dean and his dramatic headlines, but now Chris Harrison has revealed he had a vasectomy.
And on that note, we're going to snip this and take a break.
Oh my God.
When we come back, talking to Farmer Wants a Wife host Jennifer Nettles, I will not bring up my vasectomy. And one of the farmers, Hunter Grayson, going to join me on the show. I'll be right back.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the most dramatic podcast ever. Chris Harrison here. The new show on Fox is Farmer Wants a Wife. The new host is country icon Jennifer Nettles. A move I didn't see coming, but a move I love. And she joins us now on the pod. Jennifer, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Where are you? Are you in Nashville?
No, I'm at home. I'm in New York.
Oh, New York.
Yeah.
New York is home.
New York is home.
Really? Not a Southern girl.
Well, Southern girl at heart. But where I lay my head happens to be in the big city.
We're down here in Austin, Texas, so we love our country music. And I have been a huge fan and admirer of you and your music. But I love seeing you on Farmer Wants a Wife. My one nitpick about the show, not enough Jennifer Nettles.
You know what? That's what I said too. That's what I said. This show is great, but I'm just going to need a little more me. I'm glad you feel that way. You know what? Producers, if you're listening,
hey,
you heard it here.
From one reality show host to another, it's probably just triggering to me because I fought those battles every day as well. Do you guys realize how funny I was?
That's right. Don't you know? Yeah.
But one thing I really do want to see more of, and hopefully we'll get there, and I've only seen the first episode, was this relationship. And I'm curious, I had a very interesting relationship with the Bachelor, Bachelorette, because I had one person to worry about. And that was something that we fostered, and the whole show was about one person. You're obviously dealing with four farmers across the country. Not so easy for you. So how was your relationship with the four farmers and how did you feel you were being used in that way?
So the format is obviously a bit different than what you described in your experience, and for good reason, because there are four different farmers. That being said, the majority of my interaction and connection was when everyone came together.
Yeah.
And we came together every episode for these big social events. Okay. So that was the majority of my interaction, which was, I consider myself more like a fairy godmother kind of role. Yeah. Where
I get that.
You know, where I come in and I like pat them on the back, especially for the guys in this scenario, because these are four guys. They are real life farmers.
Right.
They have dedicated their lives to their work, which means where farming is concerned, it is very demanding. And they live in small towns. You know, the joke that they've made is like, look, I know all the women in this town and I'm related to half of them.
Right.
So like, what's a guy to do? So that being said, then you put them in this environment where they've never had, you know, possibly one woman on their farm, much less a whole group of them. Okay. And there's cameras and it's as delicate of a subject as love. So it's super exposing and super vulnerable. So these guys need some encouragement. Like, all right, they're also really good freaking guys, Chris. They're like really nice people. So they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So the entirety of the time, it's just like, okay, I know you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings and say that you have more of a connection with one than the other, but you can't live forever on your farm with eight women. I'm sorry.
Right.
Like, it's, you just can't.
Well, did you notice that changed? Because obviously that's something that each bachelor and bachelorette has the toughest time with. It's oddly those early, we call them rose ceremonies. By the way, what did you guys call them? The hay bale ceremony, the roundup? What
no,
was
and
it?
There isn't that. That's another distinction that it's not the same. There really isn't a ceremonial moment. It can happen at any point in the show.
I was just wondering what you guys called it early on as everybody got together. Did you find that, not that they become more calloused, but you almost become better at breaking up because you realize at the end of the day, like you said, you're not going to have 8 wives. You're not going to have that many. So you are there to meet one. You're there to meet the love of your life. Did you find it got easier for them? Were you able to facilitate that better as time went on?
I found that it did get easier. I found that at the very least, I think they became more comfortable. I don't know if I would say easy, but they definitely became more comfortable and more experienced / more practiced at realizing like, look, guys, there is a timeline structure here. I know it is a reality show, but the you know, it is, we do have a show to make.
Right.
I'm
curious, obviously, great call by Fox and by the production team to call you to do this. You are a natural fit. What made you want to do it? Because obviously you have, the sky's the limit for you. Your career, you're crushing it in the country music world. When they call you, what was it about this that you said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go do reality TV.
You know, I've done a little bit of it here and there before, but really for me, what got me with this show is, you know, as an artist, as a storyteller, I love telling stories. And I love, and as a romantic, I love a love story. Okay. So who doesn't? So this, I really, as I learned more about the concept and saw, you know, a few of the episodes from other shows in other countries that they've done, I really felt like this is my opportunity to facilitate someone else's love story. And I love being that kind of observer. For me as an artist, I definitely pull from that, you know, observationally, but to get to actually be a part of it with someone, even if it's just adjacent, I felt like that was a really fun opportunity.
Well, and you've been in the trenches before. You have loved publicly, you have lost, you've been divorced, you've been remarried. So you have been on that roller coaster ride, which I think is important as a host because you have to truly be empathetic and understand, what are these people looking for? What are they scared of? What are they afraid of in all of this? So it makes you a better host, oddly, the crazier stuff you've been through personally.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't even know if I would say like it's the crazier, because when we look at the majority of people, you
just
know,
life.
It's just life. It's just life for people. But I will say, you know, the more challenging and therefore on the other side of it, enriching, I think that does add a patina, or it adds a level of grounding where you're able to then offer something experientially that feels authentic to someone who might be searching and struggling within that kind of scenario where love is concerned. So yeah, I think it's
said the same thing. I oddly was hired because I was married and had a child at the time, but I felt like I became a better host once I got divorced and realized, oh, this is what's out there. This is how hard it is to date.
Yeah. And also I think, you know, it's just the older I get, Chris, the more I realize that I have gone into way darker caves and therefore come out way more enriched with way more skills than I ever did in my youth. Right. And not to say, because at the time everything feels, you know, when you're in it, everything feels big. But as I look back, the stakes as we get older become higher and higher. But so do, you know, so do the rewards. And so I feel like, yeah, that's valuable, man.
And that's what's beautiful, because we start seeing that in your music. You start seeing it in your hosting skills and your life. And I'm sure this has poured out into the pages of your music. Has there been some correlation or some kind of crossover into your music from all this and this experience?
I mean, of course, I always, you know, there's some of my music that is confessional. There's some of it that is observational. There's some of it that is absolutely fictitious. But as an artist, we can't help but put our own parts of ourselves into it. I may not understand what a specific scenario is, but I definitely understand my version of what the emotion behind it is. So all of that life experience for sure, it becomes what I draw from as a writer and as a performer and as an artist or as a host,
yeah.
You know, all of it. We pull from all of it.
It is interesting. And I'm curious about your idea of what it was going to be like to host a reality show and what it turned out to be.
Well, you know, I did a little bit of it with this show back, 11 years ago, mm-hmm. Called Duets. Very different.
I remember
format.
It, yeah.
It wasn't romance reality. It wasn't dating reality. It was like music competition reality. So I had done some of that. I did Go Big Show. I was a judge on that. So some of that live in the moment element of it, mm-hmm. you know, I definitely love and can feed off of that, but never having done the dating shows and the romantic shows, I wasn't necessarily surprised, but I was happy to feel the connections that I did when I was like invested myself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh,
it's true. I always felt if I cared, then the people watching are going to care.
Well, there you go. And that's true. That's true. Because at the end of the day, it's like, we're all, and I say this as a fan,
yeah.
whether I'm listening to music, watching television, a movie, whatever it may be, we all want to see elements of our own humanity within that. So when the person who is in the role as a host is invested, you can be invested too, especially if you trust that host, you know?
And are you a big fan? Are you a big country fan? In that do you try to see who's on the horizon, who's up and coming, or do you just listen to your old favorites?
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm you know, now because of social media,
right.
I definitely get more information about who's on the horizon and with the way, just simply with the way that those algorithms work.
I know.
With the way that the algorithms work, you know, they know what you like, they know what you listen to, and they're going to offer you some more of it that they think you're going to like. Some of which I do and some of which I don't. I'm always watching my peers in terms of who they also might be championing. So a little bit of both. But I'm going to age myself here when I say this, but I'm definitely of the age where, yeah, I love going back and listening to what I have always loved listening to.
Which is who?
Oh my God, so many. I mean, like, it depends. Like, Linda Ronstadt,
okay.
Stevie Nicks, the Indigo Girls.
Love the Indigo Girls. All right, 90s baby right there.
Oh, big time. You know, and on that, I could go off on a whole other tangent. We could get into REM. We could get into Tori Amos. We could go.
So you liked a little alternative back in the day.
Oh, totally.
So you were like back into Depeche Mode and Duran Duran and U2 and loving all
of it.
Okay.
New wave, old wave, all of it. Yeah. I was into all that. The Cure, forget about it. I mean, like loved, but I love all music and I still do. But you know, in terms of when I think about country, then I would probably go back to the 90s too,
yeah.
You know, and I would look at the Shania's and the Faiths and the Dixie Chicks and, you know, and the Garths.
Please. Oh yeah. Martina McBride. We can go on 90s ladies for forever. Trisha Yearwood was killing it.
Yearwood, when Kathy Mattea.
I love Kathy Mattea.
Mary Kay and Carpenter, yeah. Who I still love. Oh my God. Nancy Griffith, Patty Griffin. I mean, let's go.
Was there a place that when you, it may not be like Madison Square Garden or someplace huge, but was there a place when you played there, you thought, I did it. Like, this is the place. Like, I'm here in Austin, Texas. So, you know, whether it's Green Hall, maybe you play ACL Live, or there's just certain haunts around here that people play and you're like, this has always been the place for me. What bar, what place was that for you?
I mean, I grew up cutting my teeth in a little listening room in Atlanta, really Decatur, Georgia, called Eddie's Attic. And that place is a gem of a space, but it's tiny. It's like tiny, tiny, tiny little listening room space. And that's where I started out. But so many artists continue to flock to that, you know, almost in pilgrimage. All that being said, for me, in terms of what, you know, might be more well known, I would say a couple of things. Red Rocks.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
Iconic.
Sesame Street.
Wow. Okay. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Because I grew up watching Sesame Street and all of these artists that I loved,
yeah.
were on there.
Okay.
You know, I mean, everybody, James Taylor.
Yeah, like, you're right.
Everybody. And so when I got on Sesame Street, I don't know. It held such meaning to me. I don't know if that sounds crazy.
I love that
answer,
yeah.
But it's true. So I mean, and that shows also too the spectrum in this wide, wild career that, you know, everything from Red Rocks to, you know, to Sesame Street is just wild. Yeah. And Kennedy Center Honors was huge for me when I got to perform on that twice, one honoring Neil Diamond and the other Bruce Springsteen.
I just saw him here in Austin last week at the Moody Center. 73 years old and just killing it.
Killing the game.
I mean, crushed it. And the king, George Strait, is the one who came on and introduced him. It was a great night.
Oh, my God.
So I know your musical taste, was Red Rocks a big deal for you because of the U2 video?
Totally. Totally. I wanted the smoke.
Totally. The red.
You know, all of it. All of it.
That's funny. It. Go back. Kids, go Google U2 and Red Rocks and the famous video. That's very funny. So one thing about hosting a reality show like Farmer Wants a Wife, your love life and your private life becomes more open, or at least that's what people expect, right? So have you found that? Have you found a lot more interviews people are asking? Because you seem to be a little private about your love life this go round.
Super private. Yeah, I'm super private about it. But at the same time, while, you know, I have some things that are protectively off limits for me myself, my heart is very open. So, it, you know, where sharing matters of the heart without trying to get into like weird celebrity details that people just want to know, which I don't even want to know that about other people, but okay, some people do. I definitely feel open when I share it from that context. Do you know what I'm saying? From the context of
But did
the
that change? You were married once before. Were you more open in that affair relationship than your second marriage? Like, did you learn something from that first one where you're like, okay, next time I'm going to kind of keep the door a little closed?
No, I mean, the ways that it's happened for me over my career where that, you know, that graph of my personal life and my work life have intersected, the timing of it has been such that I've never been one to be super out there in terms of my private life. I just feel like, you know, for me, I put myself into my work so much, and the people that I love, I want to protect them, and they don't need to be subjected to that. And I've always been like that, to see.
What's next for you?
So much, friend. Always fingers popping. I mean, I just announced this last week. I'm in the movie The Exorcist. I just got
no way
in terms of my acting. Yep. So I'm always expanding.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's a key role, and I can't say a ton about it because they just announced it and they're trying to keep everything else under wraps. But it's I can't wait for everybody to see it, and it has been so enriching and rewarding. So
we get to see a dark side of Jennifer Nettles.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
And then what else? You know, I'm working on a musical that I've been working on for years. It has become, Chris, what I call my great white whale. It is my Moby Dick. Okay. I am obsessed. I am. And it's at critical mass right now where I've spent most of my creative time on that.
So you've reached that tipping point. We're doing this. This is going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's happening. And it's like, you know, it has picked up momentum as it has started to circle. So it's okay. It's getting ready for whatever the next phase is. But it is definitely, that's been a long and rewarding process. And by nature, those are quite timely to write. So those are a couple of things. Obviously, Righteous Gemstones on HBO that I do. We finished our third season. That should be out, I think, the summer, maybe. I don't know if they've announced when that's happening, but yeah, so a few things coming up.
And then play a little country music on the side and host a reality show.
Then a little bit of country music, and I'll be in your homes every night that you will, I don't know, click it or stream it.
Jennifer, we have never had the pleasure of meeting, and I'm so glad you took the time to come on. You are an absolute gem. And I really, honestly, and I mean this, I really enjoyed you on Farmer Wants a Wife. I think you did a great job. You fit in for someone who's, I know you've kind of dabbled in it, but to step into that role it's not easy, and it's easy to look like a fish out of water, and you didn't. You looked really comfortable.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Really enjoyed it. So thank you for being here, and I look forward to what's next. And I'll see you on Broadway then.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Jennifer.
You too.
Jennifer Nettles, what an absolute dream. Sweet, talented, incredible. The host of Farmer Wants a Wife. Farmer Wants a Wife. There's four cowboys in there. Coming up next, one of those cowboys, Hunter Grayson, is going to join us right after this. Welcome back to the most dramatic podcast ever, Chris Harrison. And we just talked to the amazing Jennifer Nettles, the host of Farmer Wants a Wife. Well, I wanted to talk to one of the farmers. What was it like to be one of the four? Joining us from, I assume, Georgia, Hunter Grayson. He's out there on the farm. Hunter, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
If anybody thinks that this show is not legit, trust me, I've been waiting on Hunter for 15 minutes because I don't know where you are, but he has no service. He has no wireless internet. The poor guy can't even get in to do a podcast.
Well, I had some cows get out, and telling them I had a podcast was apparently not a good enough excuse for the bovine.
They didn't seem to care at all about the fact that you had an interview to do. Hey, man, congratulations. It's really good to meet you. Watched the first episode and really had a lot of fun. As a Texas guy, I relate to this show, as I think a lot of people in the heartland will. What was your first take when you heard about the concept? And how did you get involved? Did someone initially bring you up, or did you actually go and try this out yourself?
Initially, I was approached for being on the show. And, you know, at the time I was single and just there hadn't been a whole lot of luck in the dating world prior to. And so, you know, you know all too well. So I was just kind of like, why not try it on TV?
Yeah, well, it reminded me of, I used to host a show called The Bachelor, and we did a season with this guy, Chris Soules, who was a farmer out in Iowa. And I went to his house. And so I know when you say you are out there, you guys are out there. I mean, where is the next big town from your house? If you got in a car right now, you wanted to go have a good meal, how far are we driving?
Oh, you wanted an average meal, you could go to Athens, Georgia, which is about 15 minutes from me. Atlanta's about an hour. So, well, actually, Atlanta's an hour from Atlanta, so it just depends on traffic.
So not easy for a guy like you to find love.
No, sir.
And they bring you on this show. And what was the process like at first? Because I know you guys did some whittling down before that first episode. How many women did they show you? What was your process like going through and trying to figure out that initial eight that you started with?
Oh, goodness. That was pretty grueling, if I'm going to be, you know, straightforward and honest. We were presented with some profiles of some just stunning ladies, and we kind of got a little brief bio about them and where they were from, and just, you know, just kind of got kind of a foot in the door about who we might be meeting. And we had to sort through the ones that we thought were going to work better on our individual farms and ranches. And it was kind of, you know, almost like a dating profile that we sifted through originally and sorted it down to the ones we got to meet, and sparks flew from there.
And you go from being single on your farm there in Watkinsville, Georgia, and now you have five women who you do not know and you really have never met other than the one speed dating moment, and you're going to move them onto your farm.
Well, Chris, I would say I've done crazier things in life, but I don't know that that would be the most truthful thing I've ever said. It's been an eye-opening experience. Thus far, it's been a phenomenal ride, and I'm just really looking forward to what it has laid ahead.
Well, what was the most awkward part? You know, because you know, when on other shows, there's a mansion, there's a resort, you know, it's a curated experience. This experience, you're going straight to the hometown, straight to Hunter's actual farm in his house. So what was the most awkward part of opening up your life like that to these ladies and national television?
You know, that's a great question. I've thought a lot about that, and I think that answer changes on a day-to-day basis.
On the daily.
But you know, I let the ladies live in my house. I actually live in an apartment over the top of my barn. It's a barn condominium. Okay. And I let the ladies live in my house. And I lived in my rodeo trailer, which is, you know, just a living quarters horse trailer. And that was a big adjustment to me. I moved from a, you know, 2,200 square foot apartment to a 8 by 20 foot long living quarters. My dog quickly kicked himself out of that, and he decided to come live with the girls.
Smart. That's a smart dog.
I can't blame him.
So can this work? Can we bring these city girls out to the farm and you truly find love? This fish out of water kind of social experiment.
You know, I've said at least 100,000 times, stay tuned to find out. And I think that answer, I have to answer that to myself with this. I will say with this show, and I don't have a whole lot of like time to watch a lot of shows and whatnot, but I know, like you said, some other shows, they're going off to Bora Bora or wherever around the world and
right.
Basically going on a, you know, a vacation with the group of people that they're pursuing. And then they have to come back to reality. This show really does put the real in reality. Like we didn't go on some glamorous vacation to just go hang out for 2 months. This was, these ladies put their life on hold and came out here to see what we do here out on the ranch. And what they didn't know, they picked up quickly and were at least willing to learn.
Look, and I'm sure it's different for Alan and Ryan and Landon, the other three farmers and cowboys in this show. But for you, what is a day in the life? Like, you know, whoever, if you end up with somebody, what is their life? What can they expect on the daily?
A lot of early mornings, late nights, and a lot of hard work in between, but there's a lot of beauty in it. It's one of those professions. It's not a profession. It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle that basically just takes over everything about you. You know, that we've had good days, bad days, fun ones, tough ones, everything all in between. But there's so much beauty in the simplicity of certain aspects of it and the trials of the hard parts that it just averages it all out and it makes it just a beautiful way of life. And, you know, I'm not going to say whoever I may or may not end up with is a lucky one or anything like that. I'll definitely be the lucky one. I'll be the lucky one based on the women on my plate.
Exactly.
It's something that I'm so excited to share with someone.
It's so you run a 200 acre ranch. I mean, legit cattle and horse rancher. Little known facts, because we haven't really gotten to know you yet in those early episodes, but you play in a band called Hunter Grayson and the Hat Creek Band. So quick shout out to the boys. Jennifer Nettles, country music icon, is the host of this show. You're in a band. You're a country boy. You love country music. It's in your blood. What was it like? I mean, this is a woman. You danced to her songs.
That's right. It was when I walked through the barn door and saw her, I was just, you know, I'd heard that she was going to be the host, and I was already excited about that. But when you're standing there and you're hit by, I mean, just, she's just naturally a star. Like, I don't mean just on stage. She's just such a bright person, and she made everything so enjoyable and as easy as it could be. I mean, there were a lot of difficult decisions, but just her genuineness is like, she just made everything so easy and so smooth. And she just had that good down home feel. It made everything absolutely that much more enjoyable. You know, the band stuff's cool. And so just to be standing next to country music royalty like that was a cool little pep in my step.
Well, I talked to her earlier, and I know it was difficult because we're talking about four cowboys at four different ranches around the country that aren't easy to get to. So she didn't get to spend a ton of time at each house, but was she able to impart some wisdom and kind of help you guys when y'all were all together?
Yes, she offered so much wisdom and guidance, and just she was there with us through every step, the fun times we had, the tough times we shared, and you know, we've really become a really close-knit group, and it felt a lot like family when you're making these tough decisions and everybody had each other's back. And
yeah,
from the guys to the girls, I mean, it was everything. Everybody was such a good team player and just supporting each other and, you know, everybody's endeavors. It made everything truly a great experience.
Be honest. Did you slip her a demo tape and just say, hey, This is the Hat Creek Band. Just take a listen. Tell me what you think.
No, sir, I did not. I'm sure I'll kick myself later in life for that. But you know, I love the music, but I didn't want this opportunity to be just like pushing towards my music. I'm not looking for a partner, business partner, you know, farmhand or anything like that, or a publicity deal. I'm looking for a partner in life, and I really wanted, at the end of the day, I'm a cattle rancher. Yeah. I happen to sing music, and I've had some success with that, and it's been a lot of fun, but there's never going to be a song sung or a note played or a stage performed on that's going to keep me from missing my potential kids' first steps.
That's
and
awesome.
I just, well, you know,
your bandmates are going to kick your butt, but I appreciate the sentiment. Hunter, I'm glad I got to know you, man. You are the real deal. And this show is too. Farmer Wants a Wife. It's a great look into the heartland, into a bunch of working cowboys who are looking for love. And I wish you the best. I can't wait to see how this turns out for you.
Thank you so much.
Hunter Grayson. My thanks to Hunter and Jennifer Nettles for taking the time today. And if you want to see how Hunter, Alan, Ryan, and Landon, all four cowboys do, well, check out Farmer Wants a Wife. Good show. Good social experiment there on Fox. Thank you for joining us. And I cannot wait to talk to you next time on the Most Dramatic Podcast Ever, because we have a lot to talk about. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram at the Most Dramatic Pod Ever. And make sure to write us a review and leave us 5 stars. I'll talk to you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.